Going into the garden right now with our favourite gardener, Brian Berry, from the Powerscourt Garden Pavilion. You're very welcome, Brian. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Very well on this wet, damp day, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it's going to get better. I mean, it's, the next few days are going to be, November.
Is.
But I think by the weekend it should be okay. Just on something else, can I throw something at you? Would you mind?
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, don't panic,
hopefully,
okay?
Hopefully I can answer.
I saw this yesterday. More than 570 plant species have disappeared in the last 250 years. Twice the number of birds, mammals and amphibians recorded as extinct. A new study has revealed from the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew and Stockholm University. You know, plants disappearing.
Yes, it's actually quite scary. But when you look at the amount of commercial deforestation and changes in the use of land, particularly for commercial horticulture, you know, the actual natural environments that these plants grow in are actually being depleted. And it's not really rocket science, you know. I mean, if we take oxygen away from ourselves, we're not going to last that long. And it's the same for a plant. You take away its environment and it surely disappears after a very short period of time.
Yeah, God, it's scary though, isn't it?
It is, and thankfully nowadays, and you know, people are much more aware of it, and hopefully, you know, get to lobby the people who can make the change, and certainly there is a world interest in this, and it's very interesting. I get a lot of students coming up for part-time work to the Garden Pavilion, and they all have a huge interest in, you know, recycling goods, talking about the planet, you know, so it's great to see that people are educated towards changing things and how we actually have done things in the past.
Some amazing gardens in bloom. I was there on the Sunday. Gosh, fantastic. And I said, the creativity of people putting various plants and grasses and whatever into their gardens.
And it's always fantastic, you know, particularly for me, being in the industry, well, over 25 years now, every year it's great to see, like, some of the young designers that are coming up and the new ideas that they have and the changing roles that gardens play for us in our own setting. You would have not, home settings, you probably would have noticed that a lot of the gardens, both in Bloom and Chelsea, are becoming more, less formal, I suppose, and more about going back to nature, and it is about the birds and the butterflies, you know, so it's great to see that on all levels of horticulture, even at its very best, we are taking note that we need to change how we actually garden.
Now, of course, many people will have gone to Bloom and be inspired and say, do you know what? I'm going to turn my little patch at home into maybe not an award-winning garden, but certainly I can do better. And you're the man, Brian, so you're going to help us design the garden. What sort of decisions should we be making?
Well, some of the design processes are fairly simple for us who actually know how to do it. But like one of the things, I suppose, in designing a garden is the first thing is a consultation to see what a person actually wants from their garden. Is it going to, they have certain utilities that maybe a washing line they need to have in the garden, do they need to have a storage shed? So all these fundamental basics are taken into consideration first, and then we actually move on to the overall site, the site layout, how the light levels are in the garden, whether it's a sunny garden or it's a north facing garden. So all of these things are taken into consideration. Then we talk about plants, and we talk about the likes, the dislikes, and what the customer or the client actually wants from their garden. And putting the whole lot together, we eventually come up with a plan. We actually, in the Garden Pavilion, have tried to shorten this process because it can be quite a long, lengthy process. And in the interest of our customer, we actually offer a service whereby you can actually take a photograph of your garden. You bring the photograph in with rough measurements of the beds, if you have existing beds. If there's no beds, that's fine. And we actually do a plan using the actual plants on the ground in the garden centre. So you take out your phone when it's done, take a photograph, and you go home and plant the garden exactly the same way. And this actually saves people a lot of money, because a lot of people will come year on year and they have a gap and they try to fill it, and they just keep putting plants into the garden but never actually achieve the garden that they actually want to get because of their lack of knowledge of plants.
And can you decide on the type of soil they have from a photograph, or
well, with the soil
which
conditions,
way does that work?
Like, well, with soil conditions, like, I mean, we have sort of general rules that we use. Like, obviously, up in Wicklow, the soil tends to be more acidic. When you move down, it becomes more neutral, going through from Cabinteely into, say, Mount Marion. And then from Mount Marion onwards, it tends to be more of a loamy, alkaline soil. So we sort of use those as general principles, and we don't go far wrong by that.
Yeah. So you get the photograph, you have a look. I mean, there's different plants that require different looking after as such. So
yeah, what we
will
try
you explain
to,
all that?
Yeah, well, I suppose what we do try, I mean, a lot of people say I want a low maintenance garden, when in fact what a lot of people are looking for is a no maintenance garden, but it doesn't actually exist. So yeah, we try to use plants, you know, to suit the specific requirements. Like, I have a lady coming in to me now next week, and she's an avid garden person. And she's actually older, so she's just lost her way a bit, and she wants me to have a look at her garden and to redesign. And that's a different situation. If there are people who just want a low maintenance, we will do a low maintenance garden. If there are people who want roses and they want perennials, and they might not necessarily even know what these are, but we can tell them about them. And if they think there's too much maintenance to them, we just take them out of the project and we just use other plants instead.
What are the most popular plants to go in, and flowers?
Well, I suppose in the plants, a lot of people are going back again towards, you know, plants that bees love, and we're getting so many requests now for plants for bees. So, like, you have salvias, you have nepeta, and these tend to be longer flowering plants that bees actually tend to hover around. I have a nepeta in my garden. I think there was about 20 bees. I nearly counted on it last week, and that's continual. Roses are always a great favourite, particularly the David Austin roses. Which is a rose that actually David Austin bred. So he got big old-fashioned double rose. He bred it to actually repeat flower and then also have a high scent, whereas most roses will just do one of those two things, or one of those three things, rather than having the three together. They are a little bit more expensive, but they're great performers in the garden. And then other than that, like, you know, we do sell a lot of, for low-maintenance garden, box plants, you know, in your typical topiary style, which people tend to use in their front gardens, or in pots at the front, which are just a little bit more formal and take less looking after as well.
Should you feed all these?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, you know, the classic example would be, you know, a hanging basket. Why does my hanging basket look like the guy down the road? The guy down the road feeds it every 2 weeks, and that makes a massive difference.
Oh, right.
And it's the same with your plants in the ground. Yes, there are natural nutrients that will be in the air, or sorry, that will be in the soil. But if you actually feed your plants, basically you're going to get a better
performing
garden.
Because people have, say, a plant that flowers every year and it's in a big box, we'll say, and the roots can get out and all that sort of stuff. But to expect it coming back every year without feeding it is probably wrong.
Yeah, because literally you're exhausting the soil year on year. So the plant gets tireder and tireder, and then it underperforms year on year as well. So, I mean, if you're planting, like, for the younger plants or bedding plants or young plants, you should use a liquid feed, because a lot of the roots are very fibrous roots, and they will absorb the liquid feed very quickly, and you get it's like an instant hit. It's like taking a tonic. Whereas for shrubby plants or roses, you tend to use more of a granular compound, and these granular compounds will actually break down slowly over an 8-week period. So you're not running in every 2 weeks to feed them. You probably feed them up to about 3 times in the one season.
Right. How do you know the difference then, which one to give?
You come to me at Paris Court.
Good answer, right. And what's the default position?
Well, I suppose what you can't go wrong with, look, if you boil it down to two basic products, fish blood and bone, it's a natural product. It used to be horse hoof and bone, but with the BSE and all the problems we had with cows and foot and mouth, they actually took that off the market. So it's now fish blood and bone. Natural product, it has a great balance of nutrients for good root growth, for flowering, and also for greening foliage. So a handful of that around each plant every, as I say, 8 weeks, and you're good to go. And that is a general fertiliser that can be used on everything. So even though you will get plant feeds that are specific to camellias, specific to roses, etc., you can use a general one, and it's a good general feed.
And what's it called?
Fish blood and bone.
Okay.
Meal. And the other one then is for liquid feeding, tomato food. People wonder why you're putting tomato food on flowering plants, but basically tomato food is designed to provide the right nutrients to get a plant into flower so that it will actually produce fruit. So it works on all plants that are
right.
actually
can
flowering.
Can you overfeed?
You can actually overfeed. If you overfeed a plant, basically what happens is the soil becomes saturated with salts, which are actually the nutrients in the form of salts. So when these little salts become so dense in the actual soil, the roots get clogged up. And very often you will see, you know, plants in a basket and they're wilted, and you look at them and they're still watered, and you're like, why is that actually wilted? And that's due to overfeeding, because of the little pores on the roots that take up the water. When they become blocked with the salts, it actually can't take up water. So that would be the effect of overfeeding.
Okay, colour.
Colour. I think we sort of touched on colour before. In Ireland, people tend to love the pinks, the purples, the blues, the whites, because it works well with our climate here and the light conditions more than anything else. In the sunnier parts of the world, they would tend to send more of the oranges and yellows and hot colours. So that tends to be the colour palette that's used mostly over here. I do have the odd client who actually prefer to just have structured gardens with green foliage, and they tend to use a lot of white, and they're called monochromatic gardens, where you just use one colour. But generally people, I have the people who like a box of Smarties basically, and they just like a bit of everything.
Right,
and that's fine.
So it's personal taste. But send the photographs into Brian at the Paris Court Garden Pavilion, and you'll make the recommendations based on that. Just before you go, Brian, I want to ask you about houseplants. A lot of people are having, like I was in mother-in-law's house the weekend, she's got a fabulous cacti there.
Yeah. Well, again, like going back to, you know, the problems with our climate and people, you know, the rise of asthma and other ailments that people have due to a change in living conditions with central heating, people are going towards having houseplants. And, you know, a houseplant basically will actually take a lot of the toxins out of the air, carbon dioxide, through their root system and the actual leaf system. So this actually purifies the air, and it actually helps and has been proven to help people with...
So what's the best one to clear the air if somebody has asthma?
Well, you can have mother-in-law's tongue. I think that's a good one. It's actually called Sansevieria. So we sell quite a lot of those. Indeed, plant sales have never been higher in Europe since the 1970s. So that'll tell you how popular plants are. We actually get fresh deliveries every week. We are amazed that, like, in the last 3 or 4 years, the volume of actually house plants that are growing. And one of the great things is that it seems to be a lot of younger people, children even, who are very interested in the cactus and the bonsai. So it's great to see that resurgence of, you know, people's interest in nature itself.
Right, okay. We must come back to that. That's cleaning the air. It's a pretty good one for the house, because pollutants inside your house are 5 times worse than they are out on the street.
Yeah,
people don't believe that, but there's all the chemicals and the sprays and all that sort of stuff.
And then just for people to understand, like, in... they have worked it out that at about 100 square feet, you actually need 2 large plants. And if you have 2 large plants, that's sufficient to keep the air pure within your environment. Now, most people probably wouldn't have a room that size, but you can work it out that even one in an ordinary living room is sufficient to actually keep the air cleaner than it would be without it, Jim.
Yeah, great stuff. Brian Berry, what a mine of information there. And you can have a chat with Brian yourself at the Paris Court Garden Pavilion, just up the road there in Enniskerry. Thanks very much indeed, Brian.
Thank you again.
Good to see you as always.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.